Hello, I am Alexandra.
And I'm Alexander, and together we are Lars Kepler.
And you are listening to Writer Types.
Welcome to Writer Types. I am your host, Eric Beatner, and I have a special episode for you this time. I reached across the Atlantic to speak with nothing but Nordic crime writers. From the tiny volcanic island of Iceland to the snowy fjords of Sweden, I have four authors for you lovers of Scandinavian crime writing. I will apologize right here and now for any mispronunciations on names, but I am someone who speaks English and enough high school Spanish to get by at a restaurant. That's about it. But we begin in Iceland with my first guest, Eva Björg Ægisdóttir. Eva burst onto the scene with her award-winning debut, The Creek on the Stairs, and her follow-up, Girls Who Lie, is just out now. This series of police procedural mysteries takes place in a tiny village north of Reykjavik, where Eva grew up herself. And we meet police officer Elma and her co-workers as they solve crimes in the windswept and isolated Icelandic coast. Eva is a former flight attendant who is now the toast of Icelandic crime writing. All the way from Iceland. This is very exciting for me. My first Icelandic author.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You have a lot in store.
I noticed you provide a pronunciation guide for your books, which is very helpful for people like myself to get through some of these letters that we don't have in English. But I noticed that you also left your own name off that pronunciation list.
Yes. Well, it was my English publisher that put the pronunciation list. But while I was writing The Creek on the Stairs, I didn't even think about English readers. So I wasn't particularly thinking about having the name easy for English-speaking writers.
Right.
Yes. My name, it's Ægisdóttir. It's very hard to pronounce.
Well, your latest book, Girls Who Lie, is just out. This is a follow-up to your extremely well-received debut that you just mentioned, The Creek on the Stairs. And you set these books in a small town where you grew up. And small town mysteries have been around since Agatha Christie. So what is there that's uniquely Icelandic about your small town in these books?
It's a difficult question. I think it's always so hard to answer. Like, I think it's best for like people that are not Icelandic to analyze that.
That's a good point.
It's hard when you live in Iceland kind of to point out specific things that are Icelandic. But, well, my town, I think it's just a typical Icelandic town that evolved around the sea. And it's a small town. When I was growing up, it was about 5,000 people living there. And for me, I didn't even think about setting my book in another place than Akranes. It's like the town I know the best. And yeah, I've lived there all my life. So.
Yeah. Well, and I guess in one way, small towns have so much in common, no matter where what country you're in. So that that's why these mystery plots can kind of be set anywhere, if it's in America, if it's in England, or if it's in Iceland.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it has a kind of like a, well, the mystery is so interesting, because if you put it in a small town, you have like all these relationship with people that are very close. And I thought that because in Akranes, there are actually the police there. They have like an investigating team of three people that have all the western region in Iceland to handle like with more difficult cases. And I thought afterwards that it must be very hard for them to investigate cases in Akranes, because I mean, it's most likely, I don't know, your wife's uncle or something that you're investigating. I mean, right. You have all these long-term relationships there. So I think it's hard to be objective there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, like so many of us, you started slow with your writing, starting when you were young. And then when you really got serious and decided to finish a novel, it seems from what I read that it all went pretty smoothly. But could it have been that easy?
Yeah, it actually hasn't. I don't know. I mean, I know that many people, they write and it takes years to build a career. And I think for me, it happened kind of fast. My book came out here in Iceland in 2018. And I got the first publisher I spoke to, they gave out my book. So yeah, and it went pretty quickly after that because I received the Blackbird Prize. So with that prize came an agent in the UK. So yeah, it happened very quickly. But I mean, I think things are slowing down now, and especially when you have COVID and everything has been going way slower than usually.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it's good because I'm a very impatient person.
Well, hey, next stop America. It's time for you to conquer the States, right?
Yeah. Hopefully.
Well, in The Creek on the Stairs, you introduce us to Officer Elma and to her colleagues. When you went back to them for Girls Who Lie, did everything fall back into place very easily, or do you feel like you're still getting to know these characters as you write them?
Yeah, I think I'm still getting to know them. I don't plan beforehand what I'm going to write about them, so I'm just learning to know them as I write. Like now I'm writing my fourth book, and it's kind of a prequel.
Oh, yeah.
And there I have two of the detectives, not Elma. So now I can't wait to go back and do the next in the series because I'm kind of missing Elma. So yeah, I have a lot of ideas what's in store for them.
Well, I want to know, how did the people in your hometown react to, you know, when you set these books there? Initially, it must be exciting, but then all of a sudden they're filled with murder and they're filled with these dark secrets. Well, how do people think?
They took it very well. I mean, they have these tours around the lighthouse where the murder took place.
And oh, wow.
And I mean, it's been kind of more than I could hope for. They're very, very proud. I think all of my books are taught in the elementary school there.
Wow.
So all of the kids have to read them. Yeah, so that's kind of crazy. But they took it very well. And especially because they are so proud of the lighthouse and the lighthouse area. It has become kind of like a tourist attraction. Not because of my books, it was, before. When I was young, it was just this lighthouse and there was nothing around it and you could go into the lighthouse. Now there's a man working there.
Wow. Well, you yourself spent some time living in Norway for a while, so you got a taste of another Nordic country. Iceland is set apart by its isolation. I mean, obviously you're on an island there. So, I mean, we can't lump all Scandinavian writers into one group, right? I mean, there are a lot of similarities, but also a lot that makes Iceland unique, I would assume.
Yeah, I think you're right. And they all have certain elements, like the cold and the dark and the long winter nights. And it's all very moody and kind of dark, I think. And I'm not sure. I mean, I read a lot of other Scandinavian crime writers. And yeah, I think they have a different tone. And I always, like I said before, I find it so hard to put everything in categories. I just write, and I think that it's actually other people's job to analyze it if they want to.
Right.
I actually lived in Norway. I didn't feel like I was away from home there. I felt it was kind of not so different from Iceland.
Yeah, very well. If you ever come to Los Angeles, it will be very different.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I wish. I've been there actually for 12 hours a few times.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was working as a flight attendant and we had like a 12-hour rest stop there.
Oh, nice.
Like back and forth from Iceland and LA. So I didn't get to see much.
Well, you probably saw my house. I live right next to LAX. You might hear some airplanes going over.
Yeah. I remember that. The one with the red house.
Yes, that's the one. Well, Iceland, it's always on the top of my list when my wife asks where we should go on our vacation next. I haven't been able to convince her to go for it yet. She likes warmer islands like Hawaii. But Do you find that there's a certain type of person who's drawn to a place like Iceland to visit? You know, when you see tourists come through, I mean, it seems like a kind of place that that certainly not everyone, it's not on the top of everyone's list, but for the people who are interested, it's definitely a life goal to get there.
Mm-hmm. I think you definitely have to be like an outdoorsy type of person. You have to be okay with the cold and not being able to predict the weather. I mean, it can be, even if you come in the summer, it can be very windy and very cold and very a lot of rain. And so I think it's people with a huge interest in like nature and all the things that Iceland has to offer, like the hot springs and the volcanoes. And I mean, we have amazing nature here. So yeah. I think that's definitely something that attracts.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, the Icelandic accent, probably my favorite the world over. I don't know what it is, but I just love it.
Yeah, well, my accent is too strong, but I'm trying to work on it.
No, it's impressive because I've never met anyone from Iceland who doesn't know how to speak English, and I've never met an American who knows how to speak Icelandic. So you guys are way up on us.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, excellent. I mean, thank you so much, Eva, for joining me. And I certainly think the American and English language readers are going to really take to this series when they discover it. And we look forward to hearing more about Elma and the rest of the crew there. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. Nice talking to you.
My next guest is a twofer. Solveig Palisdottir is a popular writer from Iceland who is just now being translated into English with her award-winning novel Silenced, though she's been very popular all around Scandinavia for a while now. And we're also lucky enough to be joined by Quentin Bates, who is Solveig's translator into English and is himself an accomplished writer of crime novels set in Iceland, although Quentin is British. Quentin has a love for the tiny North Sea island and even married an Icelander. He translates many best-selling writers from Iceland, like Ragnar Jónasson and some others that I can't quite pronounce, but it was a treat to talk to both of them at once. All right, well, we'll jump right in and get everybody on with their day.
Yes, well, our day is almost over.
Well, that's true. I'll get you on to your supper.
You can get on to supper and you can get on to your day.
Yes.
Yeah, it's Solveig you need to speak to rather than me, so...
No, I'm here, definitely here for you both, and this is going to be an interesting conversation to get to the different perspectives because you, Quentin, you have a different, a unique inside look at Solveig's work, so I'm curious to know some things from you. But this whole episode, I'm talking with all Nordic writers,
okay,
and I wanted to get into this thing that has become so very, very popular in the United States and really the worldwide. We had no idea there was such darkness and so much murder and deception and lies on this tiny little island of Iceland, Solveig. Is that you're not doing your tourism industry any favors?
No.
Well, Solveig, I do want to know. I mean, I've talked to authors from Sweden and Norway, and we sort of lump these Scandinavian crime novels into one basket, I think, when they get exported, to the United States. Do you think there is anything uniquely Icelandic about your own books or about Icelandic authors in general?
Yes, I would say so. I can only talk for myself. I love the nature. So the nature, the Icelandic nature, is a huge and a very strong part of me and my writing. I travel a lot and I hike a lot. Many of my stories, they take places not in Reykjavik. And I always go and stay where the story is located.
No.
I always stay there for a few days. Of course, you know, the place and the nature get into your bones and into your writing.
Yeah. And yeah. And when you travel there, are you hoping you're just soaking in the atmosphere, or are you hoping that someone's going to turn up dead that you can get inspired for the next story?
No, I certainly do not hope so. But it inspires my imagination.
Well, that's great.
I like to both watch people and listen to people to get inspiration for my stories.
That's what makes a writer. We're all observers and eavesdroppers, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Quentin, you are clearly not an Icelandic native, we can tell from your accent, but you were strongly drawn to this land and you have ended up writing about it and have now become an in-demand translator into English for Icelandic authors. Do you see that certain Icelandic sensibility in the books that you've translated and the writers that you've read who are from Iceland?
Very much so. People from outside the Nordic region, in America or Britain or Europe, they look at these Nordic countries, which are all relatively small nations, and they just see this sort of blonde-haired, blue-eyed, homogenous mass. But it's not that way at all. Each of them has a very distinct character and personality. Each nation has its own distinct character, personality, way of thinking, customs, traditions, and Iceland is no exception there at all.
Well, now, Solveig, Quentin is your translator for yes. The books that you have in English. And I mean, clearly you're an English speaker and Icelanders all learn English in a way that shames Americans because we're so English only. We're the worst. But I mean, obviously it's so different to write in that second language is that something you have ever been tempted to do, is just write something straight in English, or you like having the safety of writing in your home language and then using a translator?
Yeah, that's the only option because, you know, I'm not that good in English. I can write. I need to write in Icelandic. I think in that way, writing in my mother's tongue, I'm able to express myself in the way I couldn't do in English or right. Danish. Danish is the first language we used to learn in Icelandic schools, then English. Yeah, but Quentin, I'm so lucky to have him as a translator because he understands Iceland and Icelanders and the Icelandic society. So I don't have to explain to him what I mean, because he understands. Then his wife is Icelandic, and as he says, he has a living encyclopedia next to him in the house.
Well, that's great. I mean, Quentin, when you are getting some of these books, do you run into things, you know, maybe it's little slang terms or idioms or anything like that, that maybe doesn't even have a direct translation, even if you understand it from your time being there and interacting with Icelanders? Is there some stuff that just won't translate and you have to come up with sort of a workaround?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, every language has words that you can't translate. There are a few Icelandic words that need a whole sentence to convey what they put across in one word, and vice versa.
Right.
There are expressions they don't have in Icelandic that we have in English. The fun part is, well, fun part? The hard part is anything to do with plays on words or jokes. They tend to be hard to do. Fortunately, there aren't all that many jokes in crime novels. But there are all kinds of idioms that crop up that need to be occasionally need to be worked around.
For example, it's a very good example is the title of Silenced.
Oh yes, that was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's called Fjötrar in Icelandic. So Quentin, if you would explain for him.
Well, the original idea was that the book should be called Shackles.
Oh.
Because that's what fjötrar means. It almost means shackles, but it means more bonds or ties. Whereas a shackle in English is a specific metal, a set of manacles.
Yeah.
Whereas in Icelandic, it's a much wider term.
Family ties.
Yes. You know. Yeah, we had to mess around with that for quite a while before we got to Silence.
Boy, right from the beginning, right on the title page, you're already an uphill battle.
No, it was almost the only thing.
Oh, okay. That's good.
This is true. Yeah, we didn't have much to argue about at all, did we? No. Actually, so I have to say that Solveig is a joy to work with, because
well, that's nice.
Because this is one of the strange things about translating into English is that you've got a fairly good chance that your author can read what you're writing. Like my books have been translated into Finnish and Estonian, and I see the translations and I just look at them and say, "Yep, lovely. Thanks very much." No idea what's in there. But Icelandic authors, they want to look.
Yeah.
And occasionally a manuscript will come back covered in all kinds of red lines. Whereas Solveig was, I sent her the translation to read through, said, no, please take a look, tell me what you think. And I got a one-line message back. I said, it's fine, thank you very much.
Wow. There you go.
That was it.
Well, all right, Solveig, let's talk about your books, because you write not really a traditional series. These books can all be taken as standalones and read just, you can jump in at any point. And yet you write about the same characters.
Yes.
Why did you want to do something that was not a traditional serialized type of series?
I just write what I want. I'm not aiming to fit into some box. I only write what I would like to read. And I write about things that are, in my opinion, very important. All my books have some social meaning. You know, there are more to them than the crime. So if my writers like to read deeper, it's a good thing. But if you only enjoy the crime, and solving the crime, you can also enjoy your reading.
Right.
I have to have some a strong agenda, so it has to go to my heart, if you know what I mean.
Of course, you're going to spend so much time and effort in working on this. You have to believe it. It has to be something not only for the reader, but for the writer, of course.
Thank you. Exactly what I mean. Yes.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because, Quentin, now let's turn to your books that you write on your own. And, not only a translator, a very accomplished author. And going back to your first novel, Frozen Assets, the real life experiences of what was going on in Iceland at the time with the financial crisis and stuff, the real life society and the issues that are going on almost have to end up on the page.
Yeah, there's a lot more to it. Yeah. And I couldn't not use the financial crash as well, because I was there when it happened. That week when the banks admitted that they'd been using MasterCard to pay their Visa bill and vice versa. and I was halfway through writing the book at the time, and I had to rewrite it to include all this stuff. And I thought at the time that I'd gone way over the top in describing all the idiocy and the lunacy of it. But as more and more came out about the financial crash in the following years, I realized I hadn't even scratched the surface.
Quinn, I know when I go back, I finish a first draft and I go back to the top to start my revisions, sometimes it feels like I'm having to translate something that was written in a foreign language, and I have to search for what I was really trying to say on the page during the first draft. Do you ever feel that with your own work? Do you ever feel like, okay, well, that's all well and good, but how do I actually say this in English?
Yeah, sometimes that happens. I think, well, what was this all about? And why did I write that? Now, that happens all the time, I'm afraid. So why did I write this? What did I mean?
Yeah, you have to interpret your own work.
Especially, the stuff that's written late at night or scribbled down at the back of a meeting or something when I should be working.
Well, Solveig, I'm curious to know, have you had a different response from readers who've read your books in English versus readers in Iceland? Have you gotten different feedback? Have people react very differently to the books?
I only got very good reviews.
That's good.
I'm so happy. And, I got The Blood Drop, it's the best crime book in Iceland, 2020. That's for Silenced. And it makes me so happy to see how the English reviewers, they go deep. They understand what I'm writing about, and they are giving themselves time to think about the things I'm writing about. It's not done in a hurry.
Well, I think you raise a good point with the social aspects of your books, because I do think that sometimes readers will read a book from another country and only be interested in the exotic otherness of it. But when you get a book that has a little bit more of that substance, like you're saying, that extra layer, I can understand really more about the people and about the country and something more than just, being a tourist, I guess. Mm-hmm. Because I know for myself, I like to read something to be taken to a different place and to learn about a different culture and learn about different people. And it's wanting to feel like you're there on the ground. And I think if you're actually going to these little small towns, then it makes me feel like I've been there. So readers appreciate that.
That's the wonder of books. It takes Isn't you it? Everywhere, you know, and you get to know people and places and different opinions.
Right.
That's the wonder of books.
So if I can actually convince my wife for us to visit Iceland, can I come knock on your door and you'll show me around Reykjavik?
Of course. You're welcome. And I'll show you the volcano. I've been there twice now.
Oh, yeah?
It's like a 1.5 hours walk.
Wow. That's very close.
It's fascinating.
This is an urban volcano.
Yes, it's so close. It's only a few kilometers from the next village. I wouldn't like to live there. But you should come over and see it.
I would like to, but if I read your books or I read Quentin's books or any of the other writers that I've talked to today, I also feel like there's a good chance I'll be murdered. Finally, today I spoke with Karen Gerhardsen from her home outside Stockholm, Sweden. Karen is the author of the internationally popular Hammarby series of novels. Her latest, Black Ice, is a standalone, though, about an accident that brings a group of strangers together with secrets to keep and the lengths that some of them will go to keep that secret. Now, I will apologize up front here for the poor audio quality, but hey, give me a break. We were talking to each other from over 5,500 miles apart, and sometimes the connections just are not on your side. But do stick with it, because Karen was a fascinating person to talk to, and she's a great author. She's a former mathematician who brings that calculating mind to her plots, and it has helped her become a bestseller all around the world, and she's ready to conquer America. Well, Karen, thank you so much for joining me. It's a lovely afternoon there in Stockholm, Sweden, even though it's early morning here in Los Angeles. But no matter where we are, crimes happen, and we have to write about them. Isn't that right?
Well, you don't have to write about them, but... And some of us prefer to do that.
Well, and some of us are doing quite well with that. Your Hammarby series has been quite an international success.
Well, yes, it is.
But your new book now, Black Ice, is a standalone novel. But before we get to that, I want to start. You have a very inspiring story about how you became a writer, because you published a book many years ago. And when it didn't do that well, you set aside writing for a long time, but then came back to it, and now here you are. Was being a writer always sort of sitting there as kind of a regret, something that you didn't do, that you, a dream you still wanted to fulfill the whole time?
The first one I wanted to write, and I actually wrote it. It was a philosophical novel inspired by Franz Kafka, or things like that. So I was quite pretentious, but it got good reviews, really. But, nobody wanted to buy it, or not enough people anyway. So I just stopped. And then my husband, Ken, persuaded me after 15, 20 years or so to take it up again. And I was thinking that I don't want to regret that I didn't really give it a good try.
Well, your latest, Black Ice, is about a group of strangers who are forced together by a tragic accident and, of course, some secrets. There are some dark secrets in there. This book is it's a step away from you writing about the police. Did it take some adjustment to not have sort of the structure of a police procedural to fall back on?
No, I don't think the police procedure was the main thing for me. But, I created that universe, the Hammarby Police, so... Then I had to start all over again to create a new universe with different characters. But I found that really interesting and fun.
Oh, yeah. It's always a challenge to keep ourselves inspired in our own writing, isn't it?
Yeah, but I thought that I'd write something completely different from the Hammarby series. Develop my own personality and my writing.
Yeah. And you have all these shifting perspectives. It's told from the points of view of several different people. Was that a challenge to keep it straight and with all these different voices talking to you?
Yeah, it was indeed very difficult. But I'm a mathematician in the beginning, so I like these kind of challenges. And when I finished half of it, about that, I got seriously ill. So I was in hospital for 2 months. I was too tired. I didn't sleep. It was cold stuff. So, you know, after 2 months, I was so stupid. That's what you get when you don't sleep and don't eat. I couldn't understand my own story. And then I thought, what do they tell old people to do to keep their minds as it was before? And then I thought, well, that's crosswords, problem solving, stuff like that. And what could be a more challenging problem solving for me than to actually finish the book and try to understand it? So I pushed myself really, really hard. Every day I got a little bit smarter, and finally I was back where I began.
Wow, that's amazing. Most writers always complain about struggling and how hard it is to write a book, but I think you've got us all beat. So Black Ice being a standalone, when you're in the middle of your Hammerbeast series and thinking about maybe what's coming in the next book in that series, do standalone ideas keep cropping up to you? Do you get an inspiration and make a note and say, maybe I'll get to that later? Or did you finish the latest Hammerbee novel and say, okay, now it's time to write something totally different, a standalone? Was it intentional that you wanted to write something that was just on its own?
Yeah, I can't think of two books or more.
Well, I read that you said that when you started writing crime fiction, you had to stop reading it in order to not be influenced. And I definitely struggle with that sometimes, because I feel like whatever I'm reading, it kind of creeps in onto the page of what I'm writing, even if it's just sort of a mood or something. I mean, but was it hard to set aside something that obviously you love reading crime fiction? Is it hard to let that go while you're writing something?
Well, I did love to read crime fiction, but when I started myself, I just saw through some cheap tricks that other authors kept doing, like identical twins. Well, I read crime novels very rarely, but only if I'm absolutely sure that it's going to be a good one.
Well, you also, you named The Laughing Policeman as the best crime novel perhaps ever written. Now, I've seen the film that they made in the U.S. here a long time ago, but I've never read that book. And there has to be just a treasure trove of Swedish crime fiction novels that came before Stieg Larsson that we don't know about in America, right? There's a long history there.
I'm not sure it's that long, but I think it was quite immature before the 70s, really. So it was a bit Agatha Christie style.
Uh-huh.
More like, you know, idyllic environments and like the rough, noir stuff.
Yeah, now everything is in the bleak winter and snow, and you guys go dark,
yeah.
Which I love. I appreciate it, so thank you for that.
Yeah, well, we are all different. I love it when it's dark, but I don't like the, midsummer murders. I like it, but it's not, it doesn't feel authentic to me. The priest just doesn't kill her, really.
Right.
I want it realistic.
Well, Black Ice, the new one, I think this is, if people haven't read your work yet here in the States, this is a great introduction. It was a twisty story, and it really went a lot of places that I didn't expect. And I love the sort of the slow reveals of these secrets, and the shifting perspectives of the women really kept me turning pages. I like the way that you were very careful about when you would hide information and then when you would reveal information. I know writing a story like this, that's always kind of the trickiest part, don't you think?
Yeah, because you cannot lie to the reader. That's absolutely forbidden. You trick the reader, but you mustn't lie.
There's a tip for the young writers out there. Don't lie and don't talk down to your readers. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join me all the way from halfway around the world, Karen. I really appreciate you talking to me today.
Thank you for having me. That was fantastic.
Okay, well, that's it for this special all-Scandinavian episode, and I'm sure we'll have more of these Nordic noir writers on in the future. And we'll be back again next week with a brand new episode, so tune in then, and thanks for listening.